Good morning, everybody. My name is Jeremy Schiffman. I'm on the Faculty of Public Administration at the Maxwell School of Syracuse University. The title of my paper is A Social Explanation for the Rise and Fall of Global Health Issues. And I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. The question that drives this research and this paper is this one. Why is it that some global health issues attract extensive political support in the form of attention and resources, while others remain neglected? For example, presently globally, HIV/AIDS attracts extensive political support and resources. In the past, family planning has, as well as child immunization. Other very high burden conditions, such as malnutrition, pneumonia, diarrheal diseases, arguably equally high burden, attract very little political support or resources. Why is this? Well, I was prompted to do this research because I discovered, as I looked through a scholarship, that there's a great deal of speculation about this and virtually no research, which really surprised me because I think it's a pretty critical question. A second reason that I decided to undertake this kind of research was that a previous study I did, I compared donor funding across 20 communicable diseases, compared it to multiple factors, including burden, and there were major imbalances. Just to give you one example, HIV/AIDS and acute respiratory infections represent roughly similar global burdens in terms of mortality and morbidity. However, among a set of 20 communicable diseases, HIV/AIDS was receiving roughly almost 50% of all that funding. Acute respiratory infections was receiving 2%. So what's going on here? I wish to present to you the core argument that I am developing, and I want to emphasize that I'm developing it. I'm not sure it's accurate, but I throw it out as a proposition. That variants across this variance is to be explained in the effectiveness of global health policy communities, and by this I mean the network of actors, individuals, and organizations that have a shared concern with the issue. Their effectiveness in developing ideas, in portraying the severity, the importance of the issue, and then building institutions to sustain that issue portrayal. And what is this challenge? It challenges an explanation that focuses on the material reality of things in terms of such things as burden, mortality, morbidity, speed of spread, the cost effectiveness of interventions. I don't mean to imply there's no connection with material reality, but I want to throw out the idea that this connection is quite loose. To just illustrate a few examples of what might be going on here, with respect to HIV/AIDS, we have very strong, resonating, cohesive issue portrayals. The idea that this issue is exceptional, a major threat to the humanity, to security, to development. We also have a set of global institutions, a very strong global architecture that includes UNAIDS, PEPFAR, and the Global Fund that back this issue portrayal. On the other hand, if you think about pneumonia, malnutrition, and diarrheal diseases, there exists no such resonating issue portrayals of these issues, and certainly no set of global institutions to back up these fights. I was prompted to develop this new explanation because I was somewhat unsatisfied with the previous explanation I gave for the same issue. I took the same question and I published an article on the same question in The Lancet last year. And this was the framework I published in The Lancet. It essentially was a list of 11 factors divided into four categories. And I argued that variance might be explained in terms of the four categories of actor power, namely the strength of the actors involved in the issue, ideas, again, the way they portray the issue, political context, the political environments in which they operate, over which they may not have control but must take into account, and issue characteristics, the idea that some issues, for various reasons, are inherently, intrinsically harder to promote than others. We developed this list of 11 factors. Since then, I have about five or six others that people have suggested to me deserve to be on the list. But I was somewhat dissatisfied with this approach after I published it. Because for two reasons. One, Where are these factors coming from? Where's the theory, the theoretical ground behind this framework? And secondly, it's certainly not parsimonious to have a list of 11 or now 16 factors. What factors may be primary? And with that in mind, I was thinking what here may be primary, and I'm now emphasizing ideas and institutions, and let me say what I mean a little bit more about each of these two factors. They're two of the 11 or 16 that I've been thinking about. The key factor, number one, is ideas in the form of issue portrayals, and these are the public positionings of the issue, particularly in ways that inspire political elites to act. Why focus on this? Well, first, any given issue can have multiple portrayals. Consider AIDS. It's been portrayed as a public health problem, as a rights issue, as a humanitarian crisis, as a development issue, as a security concern. So multiple portrayals of the issue. Secondly, different portrayals appeal to different audiences. So it matters the way the issue gets portrayed. And AIDS has been portrayed as an exceptional crisis that threatens the world's development prospects and security, a very strong portrayal that resonates with political elites globally. SARS and avian flu similarly have very strong issue portrayals, threats to humanity and economic development that demand attention. But then consider pneumonia, malnutrition, and diarrheal diseases, arguably equally in terms of morbidity, threat, if you think that you can measure that objectively, equally severe, but no such issue portrayals, no such sense of crisis. Now, clearly, policy communities do more than just establish ideas. It's not enough just to have the idea. You have to have the set of institutions that negotiate, create, perpetuate, sustain the ideas. And this is the second factor. By institutions, sociologists use this term in many different ways, and I'm using it in a simple way, but it'll do for purposes today. But organizations, coordinating mechanisms with mandates to coordinate lead initiatives. So that these sustain issue portrayals. Think about the Task Force for Child Survival and Development under Jim Grant, backed by UNICEF. Widely considered to be a very effective coordinating mechanism to sustain the issue portrayal of children, to sustain the issue of child survival globally. Think about UNAIDS and its sister institutions with which it fights, but nevertheless are sister institutions, PEPFAR, the Global Fund. A very strong, massive global architecture dedicated to a particular disease. I would say you might think of UNAIDS as the institution that perpetuates the idea of AIDS exceptionality as its core function. My intent in conducting this research is explanatory. It's not normative or prescriptive, although I always get asked to prescribe. But it obviously does raise some normative issues. Does competition among, in a world of multiple global health policy communities, each concerned with single issues, does this work for the poor? If not, should we eliminate it? But that's a sort of naive question. Can we really eliminate it? I just would throw in one thought. The new emphasis now is on health system strengthening, a harmonization, a donor alignment. I would throw out one thought even about that. Would that lead to a harmonious, responsive structure or an authoritarian one? There may be some value in the competition itself with respect to the generation of new ideas and pluralism and energy. So I have no take on this, but it definitely raises normative ethical issues. Again, I said this is a proposal. I'm not sure whether it's correct or not. I'm now embarking on a major research effort to unpack this, see if it's valid or not. I've already undertaken several global case studies of maternal mortality, presently doing newborn survival. I've done health system strengthening. But I'm going to do a comparative analysis of 12 different global health issues across four categories to see if ideas and institutions are central to their ascendance or neglect, and what other factors may be central to explaining variance in attention. Why four categories? Well, I was thinking about the universe of global health initiatives, and most, if not all, fall into one of four categories. Either they target a disease like AIDS or malaria, or they target a risk factor like tobacco use or malnutrition, or they target a group, a vulnerable group like children, newborns, or mothers, or adolescents, or their system is in nature. They focus on health system strengthening or primary health care in the 70s. So this is the Global Health Advocacy Project, which I'm initiating, to try to get more empirical evidence about what's shaping these global health issue agenda-setting dynamics. So just to conclude, this is my core proposition. I don't know if it's right, but that the level of attention is a function of the way its policy community portrays the issue and establishes institutions to sustain the portrayal. That the connection to material reality, while present, is loose. But that this is a proposition, it demands empirical verification like any proposition does, which is, or empirical exploration, which is what I will be doing next. If it is correct, or in the realm of being correct, it raises the big questions, well then, which ideas matter, which ideas resonate? How do effective issue positionings get established? And then, once they're established, how do institutions get built to perpetuate those positionings, and why do those institutions sustain or collapse? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Our second speaker is Dr. Pen-Jen Wang, who is affiliated with the Bureau of National Health Insurance in Taipei, Taiwan.